So we know that we lain Megillas Rus on Shavuos. And there are many answers given on why we lain Megillas Rus on Shavuos. And one answer is because Rus is a famous convert. And every Jew at Har Sinai became a convert. There was no such thing as Judaism prior to Sinai. Was Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov even considered Jews? This is a debate. So at Sinai, we became Geirim. So we read the story of one of the most famous Geirises of all time, being Rus. So that's the reason why we read it on Shavuos. So we're going to use that as an excuse to go into a topic that we've been hinting around for the last several Thursday night classes, and now we'll dive into it a little bit. So we had a question a few weeks ago. I read your pasuk. Perek Yud Beis, V'chiyoger Itcha Ger. When you have a convert come to you, V'asa Pesach Hashem, he wants to do a Karban Pesach. Him Oloi Kol Zocha. It has a bris mila, they have one under him. And then you can do it. We spoke about it a couple times already. Now, Karban Pesach has a special law to it. That if someone is not circumcised, not only if he is not circumcised, if his child is uncircumcised, we debated a few weeks ago until 13 or after 13, or a slave is uncircumcised, under his control, he cannot bring a Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach is a unique halacha, that in order to be involved with the Karban Pesach, not only is it on yourself, it's on your people below you. So a son, a male son and a male servant would have to be circumcised as well in order to bring the Karban Pesach. So the pasuk says, simply reading, when someone becomes a ger and he wants to bring the Karban Pesach, he has to make sure all the males under him are circumcised. Then he may draw near to perform the service. So the question is, why do we, I mean, obviously, we said it earlier, every Yid, every single Yid has to know, every father of every Yid, like we spoke of Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu, the only way Avraham can bring a Karban Pesach, Yitzchak and Esav we spoke about, the only way someone could be eligible to bring a Karban Pesach is if all his kids and all his slaves are, why do you have to have a special halacha here to tell you that a ger also? Why? It's obvious. Why are you separating the ger? So the Chassam Sofer is a wild thing. Two different years. That we know the halach is, a ger that's mezgayer, someone who converts, loses all relationships to his family. Technically, in biblical law, a ger can marry his mother. A ger can marry his sister. There are no more relationships. As soon as he becomes a ger, or she becomes a geiris, at that moment in time, no one's related to anybody. He says like this, Chassam Sofer. What's going on, you would say, with this guy? He becomes a ger. What do you mean he has to be gemalad his kid? That's not his kid. In Jewish law, a guy becomes a ger and he has a child that's 8 years old. It's no longer his child. He might have to raise the child, but it's not his child at all. Because when a guy becomes a ger, all relatives are off. So if all relatives are off, he has no kids. So what does the Torah tell you? When he's a ger, he has to be gemalad a kid. So Chassam Sofer said it must be a special chiddush.
That really, it's talking about a ger who had children that are 100% Jewish. 100% Jewish. Not that they were goyish kids, that then he converted. Those kids are irrelevant. He is talking about kids that he had post his conversion. If so, obviously, like every Jew, he has to be gemal of them. What's the big deal here? Every Jew has to be gemal of his kid who can't eat from a Karban Pesach. Why is this one any different? So he says it's talking about a case where as a goy, he had two kids who died from some type of bris milah. Then he became Jewish and had this third kid. He has a chiyuv on the third kid to be gemal. But maybe not. Maybe because the first two died, he's not mechuyev to do a third kid. If they were all been Jewish, he wouldn't have. What do you do in this case?
Chiddush that he has to do it as well. Why? Because we ignore the first two deaths. Because when they became gemalot, it's a brand new start.
Meaning, if all three kids were born as Jews, the third kid would not have to be gemalot. Because the first two kids died. And therefore, the third kid would not be gemalot. He'd be able to eat a Karban Pesach, no matter what. Here he has two kids who were born as goyim. Do we count those two goyish kids when we start with the third kid? Or does the geir start the whole practice over? How do we look at it?
So now there comes a famous shiloh. When someone converts, how much do we consider them as far as changes? When you lose the relationships with the familiar relationships, what about reality? It comes, of course, in several different halachas. So the Bnei Yisoscha, who's before the Chassam Sofer, has this question.
Same question. Let's see it again.
We know that if someone has two children that pass away in Bris Milah, they're called hemophiliacs, I think, officially. If it's Mesiv Achmas Masiv Milah, if he has two boys that die by Bris Milah, then not only does he not do a Bris Milah, we said, he's also to do a Bris Milah. You're not allowed to do it because it's a dangerous situation. You're not allowed to perform a circumcision on the third kid based on his two brothers. You're right. That is the Chassam Sofer, correct. So now the question is this. Two children die from a Bris Milah. And the guy, while the guy was doing his bris milah, goyim do bris milah also, some goyim. This guy was a goy. He did a bris milah. He had a child from a goyish woman. Child number one, bris milah kid died. He's still a goy. She's still a goy. They have a second child. And now the child dies from the bris milah as well.
Okay.
Then they convert. And now they have a child. What's the relationship between the first child and the new child versus the other two? When we say a ger katan shenis gaya dami is a brand new soul comes into the guy, does that mean we start over fresh? Completely fresh, which means we don't care what happened beforehand? We don't care about the first two kids that died, and therefore you're obligated in the milah? Or do we say, no, he became a yid, but they're hemophiliacs? So that's the question. How do you look at this child? So the Bnei Yisrael has the shaila. Bnei Yisrael, he doesn't know what to do. How much of a new child is the child? Is he related to the first two brothers that we say, not related to... So the Bnei Yisrael has this shaila. If when you say a ger cotton, when we say, does he change physically as well? So Bnei Yisrael seems to say that in a chanami, he doesn't, it's a doubt. It doesn't only apply to bris milah. You look around, it applies many cases.
And we're saying that even though the Bnei Yisrael right now is in doubt what to do in this case, the Chasam Sofer made a rule that he was obligated in the milah. And if he doesn't do the milah, he would not be allowed to bring the current Pesach, this type of ger. Unbelievable case.
Same idea. Let's say the guy didn't do bris milah. The guy was a goy, his wife was a goy, the kid was a goy, and he cut himself by mistake. He touched the oven and he started bleeding. They couldn't stop the bleeding and he died. We think this guy has this disease of being a hemophiliac where we can't stop the blood. It happens to me, we know it from bris milah in a normal case. But once we decide this, what do we do with this kid? On a woman, let's say, we have an halacha. A woman who marries and her husband dies, then she marries again and the second husband dies, she's called a katlanis. Katlanis means we don't want anyone to marry her. Let's say the woman was a guy and she married husband number one guy and he died. Husband number two was a guy and he died. And now she converts. Can she get remarried or not? Yeah, but the question is why her husbands are dying. The Gemara has a suffix. Why does a woman who have two husbands die can't marry? Why not? So she has two husbands dies. Who cares? The Gemara debates and discusses the reason behind it. One of the reasons is because we assume there's something within her system that gets passed on to the husband. That's why they're dying. It's a physical thing on the husband. So the question is, does the physical thing go on maybe when she becomes Megaya or she loses that disease? So the question now is, in short, as Israel is saying, this is the new question. Not my question. This is a question my people asked in Twin Jizzle. I took it very seriously. When someone converts and we say they start over, do they start over with a clean slate physically as well? They start over with a clean slate legate to relatives. That's Pashat Halacha. They have no more father, no more sister, no more brother. Do they start on a clean slate physically as well, practically for our halachas? That means, could we assume that someone who was a hemophiliac now starts over? They're a brand new person. It says... someone becomes a ger, they can live past 120. We believe people live to 120, yeah. That's when you have one person living 120. But if they become a ger at 60, according to some, there's a possibility to say that, yeah, they start now at 120. According to some, when a person becomes a ger, they can make a bar mitzvah at 13 years old. So this becomes a very serious question in multiple halachas. We discussed the other week as well. A woman has to give a pidyon haben by a firstborn child. On her, not on him. So if it's his second marriage or third marriage, it doesn't make a difference. It goes on her. The first boy that comes out of a woman. So let's say she had a child as a goy, and now she becomes a Jew. So that's, again, so that becomes the question. Now, do we assume that physically everything starts over? Right, that's the question. Does the clock start brand new? Does the clock start brand new? Negeya, I'm giving you some examples. You start looking around, a lot of people discuss this. But Negeya, the big one is Bris. The second big one's going to be Katlanis, which is going to be a Rus as well, by the way. Because Rus also, if you read the story, was married twice before Boyas wanted to marry. She married Machlan and Kalina, and they died. So Boyas should have said, wait a second, I'm not sure if I can marry this woman. She has two dead husbands, unless she did a Geiris in between. Have this question by Katlanis, by Petarechem, by Bris Milah. The question becomes, when we assume that a person starts over, boy and girl, when someone becomes a ger and a ger. I mean, like, if you're going physically, what should be the title with a sister? A guy can marry his mother. Why? She's still physically his mother.
You're saying the first one.
A guy is not allowed to marry a mother. A guy is not allowed to marry a mother, and a Jew is not allowed to marry a mother. So if you hold it's a physical thing, so there's no relation, but still your mother, Elamai, no, it has to work on some level, maybe not. Maybe not. That's a bad example. Yeah, what?
According to this opinion, then if someone becomes a ger, they're not bar mitzvah until 13 years later.
Yes.
The first 13 years that they're a ger, they can't get an aliyah, they can't...
They can count for a minion. Because they count for a minion. If you hold they're starting over, they're going to count for a minion. Do they get punished for the first 20 years? It depends on how you look at this. How do you look at this? How do you look at the person converting? We know there's some type of major transformation occurring. The question is, how much of this transformation relates physically as well? But practically speaking, luckily, it will come down to certain cases as well.
Her husband was a guy from when she got married and happened to convert after they have kids already. So what are the kids now to their father? Halachically considered as kids or not?
So that was what we discussed on Shabbos. For some reason, we have to mention that good point, that when it comes to the mitzvah of Puruvu, the father, the open Gemara, the father counts his goyish kids for Puruvu. Even though they're not so related to each other, but the father can count it. That's open Gemara in Yevamos. Gersh and his Geir, the kids count from pre-Geir. That's for sure. They count toward his mitzvah. We said last time, the Machlokes, the Rambam and Tosfos, do the kids also have to be Megayer? But again, to the mitzvah of Puruvu, he can count his Goyish kids.
We see they have to do Mila again. Even if he's Gemal, he has to do the bris.
Okay, a Jewish kid born Mila also has to do a Mila. So this is our major question. Is there a physical transformation or not, enough that it affects the halacha? It means even when I can see physical any changes, the guy goes into the mikvah and comes out, they say about a great Hasidic Rebbe, when they used to go into the mikvah on Friday afternoon, they would come out, they'd be 3-5 inches, 2 inches taller. The Neshama Yisera added to them. They have on all these, the Siddur Shel Shabbos that used to say it about, the Chachanoiva. But let's say the guy goes into the mikvah and he comes out, he looks exactly the same. It could be he looks the same, but we know right away that he's not the same for sure in halacha, because now he can marry his sister. And now the question is, halachically, as far as physical things go, do we do it? So for sure there are some that say, look, it's real, that say, listen, anything that's relative to physical concepts, you can't say there's a change. You can't say such a thing, it doesn't make any sense. He still has to be based on that. The lady still killed two people, the boy still has two brothers that died. Ignore the physicality things. Halacha we can make games with, but everything else we can't. That's what some want to say. But why am I saying this now? It's a fascinating sefer. A little history behind it. We'll do now a little history lesson. There's a sefer called Zera Yitzchak. Zera Yitzchak was first printed in the late 1700s. Then it was reprinted by Reb Shlomo Halberstam, the Alta Bababa, the first Reb Shlomo, in the late 1800s. And then again, it was printed in the late 1900s. So I'm trying to get hold of a copy. I'm not getting so good at it as of now. His name was Yitzchak Granbum. When I first read it, I thought it was Greenbaum. It looks the same, but it's Granbum. The story of this family is worth discussing tonight. So there was they lived in Sweden. And the father, we're going to go to the Zayda. The Zayda was born in Sweden. Forgot his Goyish name. He was born in Sweden. And the legend of the Mishpacha was, he was born in 1680. In Sweden, where at the time in Sweden, you know how many Jews lived in Sweden in 1680? Zero. Do you know when this guy ever saw a Jew in his life? Never did. He never saw a Jew in his life. And at 1680, his father died right away, and then his mother was sick. And when his mother was sick, he was still a little baby, this guy. And his mother told him on her deathbed, listen, you have to read Moses' Torah. Chumash, read the five books of Moses. He was a little kid. Anyway, he had no parents. He died right after that. He got raised by an aristocrat because he was from a Chasheva family. And this guy, aristocrat, was putting him through all the famous Chasheva, like, army schools in Sweden at the time. And then the family legend is that at a certain point, more than once, the family legend is, his mother came back to him in a dream and said, listen, I made one deathbed request of you and you're not doing it. So he decided, a little bit afraid of what his mother's doing, so he started reading just Chumash. He's living in Sweden, has no idea what Jews are about, anything. And over time, he's becoming what he considers a Bible observer. I mean, he's looking at the Chumash, he's figuring out. Didn't have art scroll, I don't know what he was reading. He's figuring out what he's allowed to eat. It said he started keeping Shabbos, whatever he thought Shabbos was. Because if you read the Chumash like a Karaite, I don't know, you come up with a lot of heterim. You're not going to light a light, but who knows what else you do, right? And he's keeping Shabbos. And he's since he's a Chasher person, he's trying to, like, get people on his side. And the government's going to tell him. In the old days, guess what? In most of Europe, in the early 1700s, if you decided to convert to Judaism, you know what the response was? Death penalty. Death penalty. And he's requesting from people that he wants to leave the country. And in the meantime, he has 8 kids with his wife, and she's with him. This person's with him. And then when he turned 70 years old, 1750s, he decided he got reshus from the Swedish government, wasn't a government, from the Swedish people, that he can go to, there's only one country that will accept Gerim at that point in time, Amsterdam. Amsterdam will do it. He gets reshus to go to Amsterdam. He goes to Amsterdam, and he has this young boy with a matis, and according to the way it comes out, he got this kid. He was 58 years old. There's no IVF in the 1700s. I can tell you that right now. I don't have to know much about science to know. No IVF, no nothing. And he had this boy, Matis, who was a Lusha kid, and they went to Amsterdam before the kid was bar mitzvah. And in Amsterdam, there's one of the only country in Europe at the time, you're allowed to have a geiris. So they gave the father the geiris, the Zayda, and he changed his name to what? The first obvious name, Avram. And he became Avram Granbaum. Granbum. And then his son was Megair also, but his son was a little kid then. He's under 13. We know what that means. Under 13, you can't have a real Geiris. Okay. The father, Nebuch, passed away before the kid was Bar Mitzvah. Now the kid becomes Bar Mitzvah, and he also takes on a Geiris. And he names himself, if your father's name Avram, what's your name? Yitzchak. So he becomes the name of the sefer. He becomes Yitzchak ben Avram. And the Rabbanim in the town, he writes in Nakdama to the sefer. He printed this in 1787. He was already a little older. He was born, by the way, in 1737. 1737, and he printed the sefer in 1787. He was about 50 when he printed it. So he, in the Hakdamat HaZeifa, he writes to Rebbeim and Amsterdam, who he writes Lishma for free. They taught him, but he was obviously a star. He was getting better and better and better. And it seems to be, as he was getting better, the Mishalachim were coming to Amsterdam at the time. I had some wealth there. They were coming to Amsterdam, big Mishalachim, and they were saying, this guy's tremendous. And they tried to tell this kid, come back with us to Israel, because we could use you there. And the Amsterdam community, including the Rav of Amsterdam, said, no, we're not letting him. He's like our prize. We're not letting him leave. And he was like a little shmonik. He wouldn't take money as kollel. He held, you have to get a job. So he became a diamond merchant for a while. And then at a certain point, he couldn't do it anymore. He got old. He couldn't see as well. So he became supported by the community. He was a kollel guy. And they told him, we're not letting you leave. And it says he became a bucky in Kabbalah, in halacha, and everything. So much so that in 1790, when the Rav, or 1790, when Rav Amsterdam, the Rav died of Amsterdam, he became like the de facto rabbi at the time. 1780 was it? I forgot. 1780, 1790. He became like the, he, now, by the way, it's a big chiddush now, because the Halach on the Shulchan Aruch openly states that you cannot have a ger lead a community. They're possible to be a king, they're possible to be a, but they did. For 3 years, he was like the shtickel Rav in the whole place there. And he was, and he knew a lot. And then he decided he's writing a sefer called Zeri Yitzchak. On the three Amudim, Allah Torah v'avodah b'nils chasadim. He wrote a sefer like that.
Listen, a ger can't be a
rov? Can't be a leader. So the question, what you call leader now?
Isn't
Pirkei Avot? Shmaya Vavtayim. If we get to that, we'll have a whole, that's a whole nother share. How did Shmaya Vavtayim become the leaders of the generation? Bekasha. Because Gerim can't. And some want to learn because of that. We're showing them, want to learn that Shmaya Vavtayim were not Gerim. The parents were Gerim. Because the mice, it's not so easy to have a ger become a leader of something. So here he was, leader of a community, and he put out the sefer called Zeri Yitzchak. In the Zeri Yitzchak, he talks something fascinating about the story of Rus. Relevant to today, we're coming full circle. So what happened to the story of Rus? We begin the story with Elimelech and his wife and two sons, Machlon and Kilian. They leave Eretz Yisrael and they go to Moab. Then the two sons get married, and then everything's going downhill. They marry Rus and Arpa, and then Elimelech dies, Machlon dies, Kilian dies. Okay, and then Naomi, the bereaved mother and widower, her husband died, her kids died. She says, listen, what am I doing here? I might as well go back to Eretz Yisrael. So she starts going back, and the two women are coming with her. Now, the famous fundamental question, first question on the Megillas Rus is this question. When did they convert? Did Machlon and Kilian marry Goyim or not? The Gemara says Machlon and Kilian were punished by death for what? Leaving Eretz Yisrael. Now, if they married a Goy, that would seem like a much bigger crime. Then more so, it says, there's the problem, when they're coming back toward Eretz Yisrael, Naomi starts teaching them the halachas of Geiris. The first parak of Rus, you go to the Gemara and Yevamos, the halachas of Rambam, is all Hilchas Geiris learned out of these halachas when Rus is going back. That's after they were married 10 years already, which is mashma, they were converted later on. Very, very fundamental question. When did they convert? Did they marry Goyim or not? But in that situation, Naomi turns to her two daughter-laws and she says, guys, Gayavek, I don't want you near me. I don't want you reminded of my sons. Don't come with me. She's pushing them away. Hilchas Geiris, you push the person away. And they're like, no, we want to come with you. And she pushes away again. Gemara says, you got to push away three times. Read the story of Rus. Naomi pushed away three times. And then it says, at one point, Arpa gave up. I'm going back. And Rus said, I'm still going with you. And then it says, Vateilachna Shtehem. The two of them went together. The Medrash says, what's Shtehem? What's the two of them? They were equal. So this Zera Yitzchak, this Rabbi Yitzchak Granbaum, has a question. What are they equal about? He says, if you hold she didn't do a Geiris 10 years ago, she didn't do a Geiris now, because Naomi can't be a Bezdin for a Geiris. In order to be Megai, you need a Bezdin. And who's on the road? It's Naomi. It doesn't work. So he has this question. Now, if you weren't Megai earlier, clearly it wasn't Megai now. So what's Vaitelach to Shteyem? They're equal. Shteyem means they're equal. They're not equal at all. So he comes up with Yisoid Gadol. He says like this. Every time someone does a mitzvah, a machshava for a mitzvah, you're thinking about a mitzvah. You know what happens? You create a malach. You have a malach that helps you out. Every time you want to do something. What's Malichan Esai? It's Lashon plural. It should be Hashem leads you. Malichan means Hashem with the angels that you created. You said, I have good thoughts. The angels come about and now they help you. But angels are created. So he says, when is an angel created? By a Jew, it's understandable. We have a special neshama. And therefore, as soon as we think things, angels come out. He says, this is a ger writing this. He said, but a ger, no shaykhas to the sugya. He writes, unbelievable. You have to read it. The Hebrew is beautiful. He writes, a ger, a goy, cannot understand Torah. One of his draw, it's a long piece. He said it's not possible. Their soul does not connect to it. They could study it as a subject, but it's impossible. He writes the same way that each Hebrew letter is infinite, a sefer is infinite, the whole thing is infinite, and a non-Jewish soul cannot connect to it. He thinks he's connecting, but it does not connect. He says when a ger is in this gayer, he writes openly, don't think it means a new physical body. What we're discussing. Can't be, he says. He says the chush is meyed, a person could see by himself. There is no physical change. If you were a hemophiliac, you're a hemophiliac. If you're killing people, you're killing people. As a lady. There's no such thing as a change physically to a ger. He writes this. He's a ger. He said, but what does happen? What does happen is you get a new neshama. A brand new neshama you need because as a goyish neshama, you can't connect to the Torah. You can't read the Torah. So a goy who wants to become a Jew needs a new neshama. That's ger katan shenoyla dami. Just like someone comes out of nothing into and a human being becomes a soul, the soul of a goy now gets a new soul of a yid. He says, when does the soul happen? Chiddush atzim. The soul comes in not during the geiris.
Afterwards?
Before. When the thought process is, should I be Megayer? I want to be Megayer. At that point in time, the new neshama comes, and the new neshama helps them to convert. He says, the Raya is, so what it says, Rus and Naomi walked Shteyem, Naomi was a tzedekah. She has schar for 75 years. Rus became nothing. She's not even Jewish yet. But at this point, they had the equal neshamas. Shteya means equal neshamas, a Jewish neshama that can go in the right direction. That's his chiddush he wants to say. Saying that there's no physical change, that might not, I mean, a lot of people say there is. That might not be such a major chiddush. But saying that the neshama comes in from before is a major chiddush. That's what he says. Vaytelach neshteyim, that now when she advanced toward it is when it began to happen. The neshama changes with the thought process alone, and you need a new neshama, or else it won't work. You can't even move into that process without the new neshama. And then what happens is, historically speaking, the French Renaissance happened. Mr. Moses, when did the French Renaissance happen? Late 1700s, Napoleon. And what happens is it sneaks into Amsterdam. And in Amsterdam, like in the old days, there was only one community in each. There's no stieblach, one shul per thing, under one auspices. When the French Renaissance occurred, what they did was in the French Renaissance was, one of the things was, to have equal rights for everybody. So a lot of the people decided they want that, they like this idea, equal rights. It sounds good. So there became a breakaway minion. Big Zach. It was a huge fight. In the late 1700s, there was a breakaway minion from the Amsterdam tequila, and the breakaway minion was people who were part of the French Revolution of independence for people. And one of the things they did, no presidents, no hierarchy of a shul. Out. Everyone's equal. You can't have some Balgaiva walking around saying, Ich bin du. No presidents. Kick them out. But the old guard had a big problem with this. And they opened the shul, and the old Rav agreed that the best one to run the shul was going to be this Rav Yitzchak Rambam. Because he doesn't have such a Messiah. He has preconceived notions. And he was an intelligent person. And he could handle a lot. And he said, you should run the new shul with his acceptance. A lot of the Kehillah didn't want the shul. The Balabatim, the hierarchy, was upset about it. And they opened the shul in Amsterdam. And it only lasted about 10 years. And then Napoleon took over again, whatever. Historically speaking. He ran the shul for about 10 years. And in that shul, he created new things. And that created a big problem. Because the old-timers, they were throwing out the tzetlach on the 48th Street. They were putting up signs saying, you know what the new shul represents? Reformism. But this Rav Grunbaum was not at all about religious change. He was about political things, about rights, political rights, that everyone should be the same. So he made certain rules in the shul. No selling aliyahs. Why? Because when you're selling aliyahs, what happens? The presidents decide who they're looking at. You know, when you raise your hand, and they pretend they didn't see you. Because they want their friend to get the aliyah. No selling aliyahs. Then he said he wants to make a new thing. The announcements, not davening. The announcements after davening should be in Dutch. It used to be in Yiddish. He said, no, let everyone understand what's going on. They did something fanatical at that time. All the extra piyutim, they cut out. The Rabbi Yitzchak said, I want people to, and he writes this in the Sefer, I need davening to have people should recognize what davening is, as opposed to going to shul, becoming schmoozing, and becoming just anshim melamuda. You just daven because you go to daven. He wants people to be really davening. So he wants to cut out everything. So one of the ways to cut it out is to make it shorter. Make it shorter so a much better davening. Everyone agrees with that statement except for a couple of people there. Everyone agrees, cut out the piyutim to make a shorter davening. People can concentrate more. Well, no one in this room agrees. Only me. So he cut. And then he did a couple of wild things. He said, since we're a brand new kehillah, we're allowed to do certain things. He said, Kitnias is mutter. But he wrote a tshuva. At the end, what happened was, Rabbi Yitzchak's son, whose name was Yisrael, also sort of a ger, wrote a sefer defending his father's practices against everything they wrote against. And he said the Kitnias was only a monetary thing. But he did one thing unbelievable also. Because in Amsterdam at the time, there was an Ashkenaz kehillah, and there was some Sfaradim. They were all under the same kehillah, but there were two different minyanim. And there were ex-Maranos who had come from Spain into Amsterdam. They were waiting. Sfaradim have a minig. They say Birkas Kainim every day. Ashkenazim have a minig. We say Birkas Kainim. Yeah. He instituted Pshara every Shabbos. And Yontif, but every Shabbos. So he did a couple of interesting things. And because of these couple of interesting things, he got some flack. But when you read it, it seems to be that he was not about creating new things. He was only really about the making it normal, making it a thing, and hopefully people should daven. At a certain point, it didn't work anyway, because I said the kehillahs mixed in the end. And he had children and grandchildren that are Granbooms, Granbom, if you want to Google it tonight, Granbooms living in through the 1900s. And they have this discussion of the two shuls. Now, the problem was the breakaway shul was the government didn't like it. Because the government liked the fact that in the old guard, everyone was one kehillah, and we controlled everything. We were the bosses of the kehillah. Now there's a breakaway, you know, rebels and breakaways are not always so good, because they're rebels and breakaways. So at the end, the shul itself got shut down by the government. But we have an interesting thing. The Sefer Zeri Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Grambam, says openly that there's no such thing as a ger physically changing. He's not going to the Halacha Shabbai. What it would mean, Halacha Shabbai, is that it could be that all of these things like bris mila and these things would not necessarily look at the person as if he changed. It seems to be that we say that. And he has a huge chiddush that says that the ger, Kachinel Adami, does not apply when you become a ger, it applies when you want to become a ger. And if you look at, we spoke about last year, that is there a chiyuv to be megayer someone? So it could be, we had a steer in Gemaris last year, it was one of the classes we gave last year, around this time. Is there an obligation to be megayer someone? And we had the Gemaris seemed to contradict each other. And one of the approaches was, said by Israel, Once the person sets up and says, I want to be a ger, at that point they have a chiyuv to become a ger. So if a guy is walking down the street, he doesn't have an obligation to become a Jew. Keep the seven Noach laws, you're good to go. But at a certain time, at a certain moment, when he's trying to become a Jew, at that moment, whatever that line is, that invisible line where he crosses it, then he has an obligation to not delay anymore. So he could wait 10 years, but the moment he says at a certain point, I'm going to be Megayer, every day he waits is a problem.
But to recap at the end, even though he himself, the Zer Yitzchak, says there is no physical change, the Bnei Yisaschar was in doubt about it, relevant to the laws of Bris Mila, and that means whether if the third child should get Mila or not when the first two are Goyim, he's in doubt, the Bnei Yisaschar. But the Chassam Sofer openly seemed to say in the laws of Korban Pesach that even for the first two died, the third one must have a Mila because there absolutely is a physical change, and therefore the third kid is not related to his two brothers.